You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, earth, spirit, community, economy, all six areas of the healthful living economy, or healthful living model, I am sorry, during your loon hour while you're sitting back and taking in the nature of reality.
You said loon hour.
So loon hour?
Well, lunchtime
sometimes,
or noon
you know,
hour.
Sometimes we feel that way. Sometimes we feel that way, and it's understandable given the nature of our world today and all the crazy things that are going on. I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my partner,
Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
And you can learn more about this show and about us at healthfulliving.org or past shows and information on the show at realitysandwichradio.com. Today on our show, we have a very special guest. Jeffrey Fawcett will be on in just a moment. And we're going to be talking about really, I think, the most important subject on the world, on the planet. I mean, we talk about this every week, but the onus of this show, the onus of Healthful Living, is the idea of teaching us about the nature of our world, what's going on, and our individual need to return to our self-empowerment, a choice about who we are and how we're being. And so we'll be speaking about the Sustainable Health Institute and the origins behind that and what its intentions are to bring forward in the world. But I think Julie has a couple of quick announcements, because we've been talking about certainly the autism epidemic as being one major manifestation of toxicity and challenge in our world. And there's a show on ABC tonight. What did we just heard about this morning?
Yes, we just heard about it this morning. It's called Eli Stone, and it's going to be a kind of fictional story on a, as far as I understand, a family with a child with autism who wins money from, or I don't know if he wins or he tries to get money from the courts because his child is injured by vaccination. So it's very controversial, and people have tried to stop it from being aired. So in the spirit of sustainable health and our need to know the truth, I encourage everybody to watch it, because it's probably not something that you've ever thought about before. And from all of the parents I have talked to, it's a very real story. So tune into that ABC tonight, Thursday the 31st.
Excellent.
Eli Stone.
Great. All right, let's get to today's guest, Jeffrey Fawcett. He is an environmental economist, writer, health educator, long-standing background in health education. He publishes the Progressive Health Observer, which is a news commentary alternative to big box medicine periodical that he puts out. He has his own health education consulting practice, as well as being the co-producer of Your Own Health and Fitness Show with Lena Berman on KPFA Radio 94.1 over there in Berkeley, which is a wonderful show that goes out all across the country on health and wellness topics. And Jeffrey is now also founded the Sustainable Health Institute, which is a nonprofit organization committed to community education and really spreading the word of self-empowerment and teaching people to be proactive in their health. And we're going to learn more about it right now. Let's just see if he's on the line. Jeffrey, are you with us today?
I am very with you.
Great.
In more ways than one.
I think we're getting that. That's terrific. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to talk to you again today, Jeffrey.
Yeah, Julie, hello.
Hello.
So, Jeffrey, I wanted to begin with just kind of the background. I mean, you've been tuned into this notion of health, of public health, of people's self-empowerment around their health for many, many years, and you've seen a lot of changes that are going on in our world. Can you just tell us a little bit about kind of your background and what's bringing you today to be starting this movement of this organization?
My personal background is that I have a PhD in environmental economics and political economy. When several years ago, when I started working with Lena Berman, I started to educate myself about health issues, although that's, being an environmental economist, that is always something that's extremely important. But I came at health issues from the standpoint of a social scientist and political economy. So it's always been on my mind, around the health issues that I deal with in consulting with people and in producing the Your Own Health and Fitness radio show, to highlight the, as it were, the social aspects of health and health issues. And I think this is really highlighted currently with what's going on with the presidential campaigns and with the conflicts that are going on in the state of California over the state Senate rejecting Governor Schwarzenegger's healthcare proposal as being inadequate and underfinanced. But what it focuses our attention on is that everyone understands that there is a healthcare crisis in our country, and there's a healthcare crisis throughout the world. The interesting thing is that, especially in the United States, the conversation around the healthcare crisis is not about health at all.
Mm.
It's about medicine, and it's about diagnosis and treatment. And some would say that the real crisis is overdiagnosis and overtreatment.
Mm.
Now, certainly one of the missions of the radio show has been to inform people about issues surrounding overdiagnosis and overtreatment, and the dominance that conventional medicine has over the dialogue of what counts as health care. And it had always been kind of nagging at me that there's something more that can be done to promote people's ability to care for themselves.
Mm.
And again, coming at this from a social scientist, a social science perspective, what I got as far as and had articulated actually some years ago, that health is not the absence of disease. That's kind of one of the problems at the core of the healthcare crisis, is that we can talk about healthcare with the understanding that it's actually the conventional medical institutions that provide that, that they're the ones who deliver health to us. Early in the presidential campaigns, John Edwards was promoting his health care reform package, and he said, you know, if this goes through, that you just don't get a free ride. You have to go to the doctor every year and make sure that you're okay. And the doctor has to give you the okay that everything's all right. So all women have to have routine mammograms, and men have to have their prostates continually examined and tested. And I had these, you know, a whole bunch of fireworks went on in my head of that's not delivering health.
Mm.
And so because this idea of disease, of health as the absence of disease, as health as a condition, and even the emergence of diagnoses, which are essentially about health, I started to think, well, if health isn't the absence of disease, what is it? And it was actually an interesting process of what we could call it brainwashing. We've been through, but how conventional medicine has so dominated the way we mm-hmm. think about health and what we expect, how we solve problems of health, that it took me literally 2 weeks to come up with a phrase that health is the capacity to thrive.
Mm.
Not a condition. It's a capacity. It's what we are able to do.
Right. I have a question for you.
Sure.
So for people out there that are listening that might be in that more medical model, they may not totally understand what you mean by, you know, overdiagnosis and overtreatment. Can you give an example of what one of those conditions might be?
Well, since I mentioned it, routine mammography there are some people in the conventional world, conventional medicine, who... actually, I was about to spout off a reference. There's a researcher named H. Gilbert Welch who wrote a book called "Should I Be Tested for Cancer? Maybe Not, and Here's Why." And he is a skeptic about routine mammography. There are the dominant view is that mammography is absolutely essential for for women, especially postmenopausal women, because it saves lives. That's the phrase that's used.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when so it's this very routine thing of it's an example of cancer, so-called cancer prevention, which is really about a form of treatment. People like Welch are critical of this because when they look at the studies, and I agree with him, there's no difference in survival rates between taking into consideration, family histories and so on. But if you look at the large-scale studies, there's no difference between palpation, breast exams, manual breast exams, and mammography in survival rates. And there is some evidence that mammography puts women at risk.
Hmm.
Now, more broadly, this is an example of how cancer is dealt with in this country, that it's really about forms of treatment as prevention and virtually no attention paid to cleaning up the chemicals that mm-hmm. are absolutely implicated in causing cancer cancer and other toxins. So that's an example of how the healthcare system works to push people into treatment and diagnosis, mm-hmm. and treatment, instead of looking at the entire health picture. And part of the work of the Institute is to help people, in a way, understand what they already understand, can see, which is that it's more than just going to your doctor to make sure that you're okay.
Right, right. And a really powerful piece there, what I'm gleaning from here, and that comment you made earlier about Edwards, kind of reflects this attitude and position that we see from healthcare institutions based on this presupposition that they have that they deliver health, that they are the purveyors of health, and that in order to be healthy, you have to be plugged into them in some way or receiving something from them in order to be healthy. That's just completely twisted. That's like saying that it's actually completely removing the reality that we ourselves as individuals are drivers of our well-being, and that I think the point that we're making here is that being healthy is something that's in our hands, and living in a way that makes us healthy is in our hands. It's not something that anybody else can do for us, and no amount of healthcare coverage or no improvements in the healthcare system will inherently make us healthier. It's all reparative. If it's all We interact with that system when there are breakdowns and needs to help us remedy or repair our health in some way. But being in the pursuit of health is something that's up to us.
I agree. I think that part of the work that that motivates me to work on the Institute is exactly that kind of perspective. But from social science standpoint, what we're fighting against is a kind of mode, a kind of way of thinking that's really been emphasized and become woven into our lives over the last century and a half. Some call it the rise of technocracy. I call it the culture of expertise. That is, you as an individual aren't qualified to know whether you're healthy or not.
Mm.
You have to go to a doctor to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're saying here. And what I want to do with the Institute, which in a way is not unique, there are other organizations which are trying to do a similar kind of thing, although many of them are focused on specific issues, but it's to give people resources and an organizational structure in which they can resist the culture of expertise, to create a counterweight to that culture of expertise, so that they can see those experts, those doctors, as what they are, their advisors. So that just as you make decisions about whose advice you take, the things you do for health is all about the information that you gather and the people you consult with regard to who do you listen to, who do you pay attention to.
Right, right. And certainly a big, big factor that keeps this system in place the way it is the fear around it. I mean, what could be more fear-inducing than concern for our own health or the health of a loved one? So just that situation puts us in high stress, of course, certainly dealing with a health challenge. And then the there's so much fear associated with that we become inclined to just go with our perceived authority. But then taking that to the to another very discomforting degree is that that fear is used intentionally to have people side with a default unifocused medical perspective, even to the point of talking people out of what they're feeling and their, you know, their own questioning, their own thinking about what's right. And so now we've moved into this kind of crazier phase of the fear actually being used as a strategy to support that way of being that you've talked about for 150 years now. So does that mean that there's maybe cracks in the armor somewhat? People are learning more, and is there some change afoot?
Well, I think it's in part that there are cracks in that the so-called healthcare system is not delivering on its promise. It's not delivering health. I'll throw out a statistic. There is a study done in England about longevity, and they compared, I think they looked at 10 years from the mid-90s to 2003, a 10-year period. And during that period, people's lives extended by people lived 8 years longer. But of those 8 years, only six were not under medical care. So what's happened is the medical system has managed to create technology that keeps the machinery going, but it actually doesn't do anything about the quality of people's lives. Mm. And that's really what health is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the quality of your life, not how long it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the problems, and so there is that failure to deliver on the promise. I also think that there are that many people have are seeing this and are instinctively emotionally responding to this, that they just don't trust that system, that it's not delivering for them. And one of the big worries for conventional medicine that the AMA discusses a lot is, well, actually two things. One is compliant patients, that is, following that patients don't follow orders properly.
Mm.
And secondly, that in increasing numbers, people are turning to complementary and alternative both medicine and solutions like nutritional supplementation and herbal support and things which are not within the realm of conventional medicine. And this is a big worry for them.
So you mean, Jeffrey, people are beginning to think for themselves?
I believe that people have been thinking for themselves for a very long time, and given the actual effort that's been put into persuading people to follow orders, that it's really surprising that people are resisting in the way that they are.
Sure.
But I think it's inherent to us as human beings. We have our own ability, our own critical faculties that we're able to make decisions about. We're able to look at information and figure out what's good and what's bad. As you so correctly described, what happens once you get in the institutions, once you show up at the hospital or the clinic, your freedom is basically taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of social pressure put on you to conform to the rules of the institution. And people, we're social creatures, so we respond to that. So I think there's the two things that are going on is failure to deliver and people's kind of inherent resistance to that basically military structure of the medical institution.
Right. Well, eventually, you know, people start taking in the data, and it works through the buzz. I mean, we're stuck in the system. We're told what to do, and I mean, this could be a very great example of this. I mean, we saw last week this new film that's out, The Business of Being Born, talked all about cesarean rates in the U.S. and how women get caught in that system, and there's so much fear there, and to be honest, their choice is really taken away from them because it's not even being presented, because the system mandates what choices they have based on insurance companies determining what they will what they'll pay for, essentially. So people are kind of caught in this system. But I think what's happening as we go through time now, as you say, that more are getting the feedback that it's not really being effective as much as it should be. They're not really coming through, and they're getting more and more invasive. And I just want to stop and clarify here that when we talk about this, whether it's Julie and I or really any other conscious health educator and person in this arena, that it's never meant to, to buck traditional medicine or to say that it's bad in any way. What we're bucking are the strategies that have been employed to pull people into behaviors that don't fully serve them, that are proven to not fully serve them, and to remove people's choice.
Yeah.
What we're arguing for, and I really don't mean to use the word arguing or fighting or but simply vying for, is a return to equilibrium and the reality that people have and should be fully informed and at choice about the behaviors that they engage in, specifically around their health. Nothing could be more important than people's personal freedom and access to all that is possible for them around their health. And I think that the more invasive that the strategies that are used by the drug companies, by this healthcare industry into our lives, the more that people will begin to feel the pinch of that and say, wait a minute, that's a little too much that you're pushing me, and their own critical thinking opens up a bit. I want to mention here the title of an article that was in the Progressive Health Observer, your publication. This is just the fall issue. You have an article here titled, "Drug Companies Want to Turn Menstruation into a Lifestyle Choice with Potentially Dangerous Consequences." And I rarely see commercials, but because I'm watching football now in January, I caught a commercial recently. And the gist of the commercial is that time of the month is now optional for women who don't want to be bothered by it, because they can now take a drug that will mess with their body's natural systems.
Yeah, it's disruptive.
In order to inhibit a natural system so that it can be more convenient for you. Now, I'm a guy, so I can never really talk to how that commercial must land on a woman, but my imagination is that it's got to seem somewhere really tremendously invasive. Like, who the heck are you?
Well, some people would feel that way, but there's a lot of people that think, "Ooh, that's a good idea." That you'd be amazed, because they don't really think that there are side effects or concerns on the other side. Anyway,
but in the meantime,
I think there's a reference in that article to a film that was put out, that was put together by a woman at UC San Diego, and I've completely blanked on what the name of the film is. If you have that article, actually, I should look at the article. But there's a film in which she does a very good job of talking to women who have different. Some women who have taken these kinds of medications because they have really severe medical conditions, health conditions. And some of the women are very happy to not have periods because they are difficult. And that's where the justification for the drug came from. But then it comes marketing, so it becomes a convenience drug.
Mm. Right.
Now, even back to the women with difficult periods, there's a complete failure to look at other things like hormone balance that could be in play here.
Mm-hmm.
It's immediately, what kind of intervention can we do?
Right.
But there's, while you were talking, I was thinking of another commercial that talks back to this issue of how do we support people in making their own decisions and getting information that they don't ordinarily have access to.
Right.
And it was a commercial for either Blue Cross or Blue Shield. And I was just floored by it because it was one of those tests where I guess I failed, because the commercial was structured in this way. The setup is you have some kind of you're supposed to be someone who has a cold or something or other, and they show these various people who are friends and family who are giving you advice, and some of the advice was actually pretty good. You know, it was take some teas, get some rest, drink some chicken soup. And then this voiceover comes, and it says, well, do you want to listen to, you know, basically, do you want to listen to people who don't know anything, or do you want to listen to an expert? Call, if you're a member of Blue Shield Blue Cross, you can call a nurse anytime, and they'll give you expert advice. Now, in terms of what's the message here? The message here is that information you get from your peers, from people you know, is bound to be wrong and bad and silly and foolish, and you clearly don't have the capacity to sort out what's good advice and what's not good advice for you. What you need to do is call someone on the telephone who isn't even in the same room with you, who knows nothing about you, and who's going to answer your question. It goes to a model that's at the base of health and healthcare in this country. That's in a book called Making Sense of Illness, in which he says that the author is a medical historian. And he says that there's a difference between specific individual illness and specific disease. The healthcare system treats diseases, which are abstracted from the person who is a person who has an individual illness. You experience what you experience. And the way that healthcare is promoted and presented in this country is it's about diseases, which isn't really about you as a person. It's about this thing that we're going to take care of. And so it's there's this setup here. One of the principles that I've learned working with Lena is that everybody has a unique biology. And our health and illness comes from how our unique biology responds to its environment. So when we're dealing with health, issues of health and illness, we need to look at both sides of that equation. Of some people are more reactive than others or to certain environments, and other people aren't. So part of solutions to health and illness has to do with figuring out what's your biology? What's your biological history? What's your biology doing right now? And what environments are you exposed to that are doing you good and doing you ill?
Right.
And you're not going to get that from a nurse on a phone call.
Right.
You are going to get that or some of it from the people you talk to. And that's kind of the basic structure that we want to build with the Sustainable Health Institute.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. This is Martin and Julie Matthews with Reality Sandwich Radio every Thursday at noon. We're on the line today with Jeffrey Fawcett, and he is the creator of the Sustainable Health Institute, and we're going to learn more about it right now because we were just talking about the need to create alternatives and to provide alternatives for people, Jeffrey. So let's follow into that right now. Tell us how kind of the founding principles of the Sustainable Health Institute, and how is that going to serve us in this educational need and connecting down into societies, local communities?
When I started thinking about how to put this organization together, I knew that the key was going to be how we could use our strengths of Lena and my experience and knowledge and the people who work with us around health alternatives, and how we could put that in the hands of people in the community so that they could become resources for their community, so that we're not reproducing that culture of expertise, but instead enabling people. And we talked about, we're looking at doing it in a number of ways, but the one that actually I'm most excited about right now and has always been really the core for me has been in creating local chapters of the Institute, which, put it very simply, is what local chapters do is talk to each other, talk to us at the Institute, learn, make contributions to the knowledge base that we're going to build, make that knowledge base accessible so that we are always taught, there's this ongoing conversation about health and learning, and health in the broad sense of the capacity to thrive, what's good for us personally, and also what's good for us as communities. So part of the purpose of local chapters is for people, friends, neighbors, people in the same community to come together and discuss what's good for our individual health, and then go out in the communities and participate in ways that will support health in their communities. And but the most important thing is that conversation of us sharing the information that we have about health, and people in local chapters sharing what they know about health. Two right. different kinds of knowledge.
And if any of you listening out there have listened to Your Own Health and Fitness on KPFA, I can only imagine the wealth of knowledge that the two of you over the years have gathered in just listening to that show alone. There's an enormous amount of information. So I'm really excited, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are just really starving for all this information you've gathered over all these years.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. We hope so. We hope that the information that we've put together can be put to use. And I see this, the Sustainable Health Institute, as a development of the radio show. One of the problems that we experience, there are several problems that we experience with the radio show. One is, the information is in one direction. We do our research, and we get suggestions from listeners. But fundamentally, it's us talking or us interviewing somebody, mm-hmm. and we're talking about an issue. So it's a kind of lecture, and that's extremely useful. Extremely useful way for people to get information. But there's another process, which is an interactive process, which is we tell you what we know, and you tell us what your experience has been, mm-hmm. and add to that mix. And the reason why, my social science brain looks at this as building a network, a social network that is as powerful as the social network that constitutes the healthcare system right now. That sounds rather grand, but ultimately that's the purpose of it, to enable people to tap into that vast body of knowledge that's sitting out there, waiting to be listened to.
Mm. Right. Well, we're all for that, absolutely. Tell me, I'd like to hear from you a little bit. How do you imagine it working for a user out there that would benefit from the existence of the Sustainable Health Institute, a family dealing with an issue, individual dealing with a particular issue, and how you imagine that their connectivity to this, whether it's through a local chapter or whatever, would be beneficial to them in some way? How would it serve them?
Well, I can give you a very concrete and personal example. I live in West Sonoma County in the Redwoods. Right now, when I moved here, there was no cell phone service, which was really a good thing as far as I was concerned. And recently, I caught wind of Verizon approaching the, since we don't really have a city, we have a park and recreation district that kind of serves as a governing board for our little community out here. And they had been approached by Verizon to place a cell phone tower. Now, where I live is close to a thoroughfare called Bohemian Highway, which, if anyone out there has heard of the Bohemian Club, it's traveled by people in big limousines to get to Bohemian Grove, which is the conclave of the mighty and powerful. Our little park and rec district board of directors was approached, and they were going to make a decision about signing a contract with Verizon, and we heard about it like 3 days before this was going to happen. Well, what I was able to do was put together a packet of material and during public meetings stand up and address this issue as to why this was a bad idea. And I was able to do it fairly quickly. So one purpose that I imagine someone wanting to be in a local chapter solving is situations like that. Oh, my God, they're about to do something. I don't know all the information about this. Where do I turn? I turn to the Sustainable Health Institute. Mm. Where do I get good information about cell towers or water systems or an incinerator or you name it, some environmental change, something that's being done that has a health impact. There's another piece of this, which is to help people see that things that go on in the built environment, things that happen to the natural environment, have a health effect, so that becomes a piece of what's discussed publicly when public decisions are made. That's the kind of social side of it. From a personal side of it, what I see members joining local chapters for is that they have either am reluctant to say that local chapters should be there for people who have to deal with specific conditions. I know lots of people have issues that they deal with, but those people tend to be organized around those issues already. But there are people who are interested in health and what personally they can do to make their health better. And that's what I see local chapters doing. In, for instance, an underserved community underserved by the healthcare system,
mm-hmm.
I see local chapters as being a way for people to get high-quality information that empowers them on their own to do things that will maintain, sustain their health, and promote any healing from injury or illness that they have.
Right. My goodness, I would imagine that just involvement with this kind of an organization would itself be health-promoting, to just be making the action to become part of a collection of people whose orientation is towards health and towards learning and towards, you know, self-care and connecting with others to do it. I would think that itself would be tremendously beneficial health-wise. Now, you'd also mentioned the class issues and how class affects health, and you had just touched on, you know, neighborhoods that are sort of, you know, underserved by, you know, the broader system by way of their healthcare needs. How would this help them as well?
It would make resources available to them that gives them directions to both take collective action and individual action.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it would provide a way for people to understand that a way to get healthful food would be to, say, start a community garden or to get involved with community-supported agriculture, start talking with farmers to get fresh produce, fresh, whole, nutrient-rich foods delivered to them, or to establish a farmer's market. One of the one of the formative events in this. You know, there are little pebbles that get collected as you move towards a goal before the goal is really before you really know what the structure is. But several years ago, I was listening to a radio show in which people from the Prevention Institute in Oakland were being interviewed about the obesity epidemic, and it was a call-in show, and this young man from East Oakland called in and said, "I am very interested in my health, but I have to make two bus transfers in order to get to some place where I can buy organic produce. I've got a significant problem." So part of the purpose of local chapters is to solve problems like that. People who want to eat better, how do they do that? Mm. And what both personal choices do you make, but also what kind of collective choices can you make?
Mm-hmm.
How can you reach out into the community and work with community organizations?
Right.
So that it's not kind of another piece of the dialogue with the current healthcare system is one-on-one. You talk to your healthcare provider. It reinforces a broader cultural orientation towards personal consumption, that we're these individuals that in order to make changes, we have to just change things ourselves, and that's not true. It's obviously not true. And one of the reasons for promoting the local chapters is to give people the sense, as you, it's an aspect of what you had said, Martin. It's this is good for people's health because it empowers them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of epidemiological work that shows that this is true.
Mm, amazing. So how can people, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you at this point?
They can go to our website, which is sustainablehealthinstitute.org. Sustainable Health Institute is all one word. Sorry that it was so long. And on the front page, you'll see a little notice on the side that says start one, join one, and that will take you to a page that tells you about local chapters. Mm-hmm. How they work, and how to start one, and how to join one. I've just launched this thing, so it's still a little crude, but that's the best way to get information. If you want to call me, you can call me at 707-874-1496.
Wonderful.
Now, I see you've got an initial workshop here, Change Your Health, Change the World.
That was one of our first, that's another from another program that someone who I think you've had on your show, Matthew Sluter, and I were putting together back in the fall. The idea behind Change Your Health, Change the World is that one of the things that we want to do is support community organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways to do that is to ensure that the health of community organizers is good. So Change Your Health, Change the World is intended to be a workshop that, to some extent, puts into practice the kind of ideas that I've just been discussing about local chapters.
Hmm.
The idea is that we get a small group of people, eight to 12 people, together, and we someone from the institute facilitates and brings what they know about health issues, and then each person talks about what health issues are important to them, and then we from the institute provide what we know and encourage information from other people in the room, in the group, to talk about what they know on the issue. So that it is neither a lecture, nor is it 12 consultations with voyeurs. It's people in dialogue about health.
Right.
What can you learn from each other?
Right.
And who can sign up and start a group? Do they need special qualifications? Or
you mean a workshop group or a local chapter?
A local chapter.
Anybody can start a chapter. It's very open. I can imagine that it could be groups that are open to anyone. I can also imagine groups forming that want to have a particular kind of person. It could be along gender lines. I could see that happening. Could be along age lines. Could be along ethnicity lines. The fundamental thing that a chapter has to do is meet regularly and talk about the information that we distribute regularly and make contributions back to the Institute so that what individual chapters know becomes available to other chapters. So the becoming a chapter is pretty easy. You just need three people.
Great.
Could people create a chapter around a particular ailment or condition, even, for example?
Like, oh, sure.
You know, everybody who, you know, wants to get in shape or lose weight.
I could certainly see that. What I'm trying to create here is a structure that is still is very open, that is plastic in the really old sense of plastic, of meaning it forms to what people need, and
right.
It's not that I have a specific vision. My vision is that people are better able to care for themselves.
Right, and you've really struck that, you know, very, very core. I mean, that's where you start, and how it particularly manifests and unfolds will be also, you know, interplay of the how people, you know, take it and shape it. But clearly, you know, with a name like the Sustainable Health Institute, you're really clear and pointed about, you know, what is the purpose here? What is this about? Sustainable health, sustainable ways of being, and, you know, in doing that in a very professional way, by way of providing the information and resources, and also in a very open and community-centric way where people can be involved and, you know, explore and share and learn and self-empower themselves at the same time. It really seems to be quite an opening of a dialogue, Julie.
Yeah, and I think that this is just the way that it needs to be. You know, it's all about each of us being the change we want to see, and so if the more we can connect with each other and learn from each other and tell other people about it and get other people involved, that's how things are going to change, and having a supportive resource like this is just really important for that.
So folks can go to sustainablehealthinstitute.org to read all about the Sustainable Health Institute and to read more about Jeffrey Fawcett and his work there. Once again, we've been connecting today with Jeffrey Fawcett. He is a PhD, environmental economist. He's also a writer and health educator, has written the Progressive Health Observer, co-produces Your Own Health and Fitness with Lena Berman on KPFA every Tuesday from 1 to 2. And any final quick sentiments today, Jeffrey?
One of the things that was the origin of the name Sustainable Health Institute was that I was talking to a local college about teaching some classes in their sustainability program. And it occurred to me when they asked me, are there any courses that you would like to teach? And it struck me, working in health, that no one had been talking about sustainable health, when that seems like a very natural thing. Coming from a background, natural resources background, sustainability, it just made sense to me.
Right.
And what it's about is health and really the sustainability of communities,
right,
of collections of people.
Right.
And what a healthy community is, sustainable community is one where people's health, their capacity to thrive is maximized.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well said. Jeffrey, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great to connect
with
you.
Yes, thank you for being on.
Oh, you bet.
Take care.
Okay, thanks.
All righty, bye.
Bye.
Wow, this is great. This is just what we need. You know, other people out there doing their thing, supporting other people. It's really inspiring, and it's really a positive thing to see.
Well, there's such a need for people to connect amongst themselves and mm-hmm. share information amongst themselves, join together in pockets of community that make sense amongst one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the more that we go forward in time, the more that we're learning that a lot of these systems and a lot of these sources of information that we're getting, which are very important to us, are a bit tainted and have some objectives in mind that don't really serve us completely. So we've got to be a little bit wiser,
mm-hmm.
a little bit sharper. We have to be connecting amongst ourselves and be a bit more discerning in the choices that we make, especially with respect to our health. Nobody can be in control of your health other than you.
Sure.
Right? And the notion that healthcare systems give you health, or that you need that system to be healthy, that's absolutely erroneous. They're there to serve you when you need to restore your health in certain mm-hmm. ways, sure, but they don't deliver health. That's
right.
Up to you.
Right. Well, this is very in line with healthful living and what we talk about all the time. So it was great to have him on. And, you know, at Healthful Living, we often talk about the six, what we call kind of the six circles or the six areas of sustainable. We call it sustainable living, but mm-hmm. very, very similar concept, where we have to look at the individual and the health of the mind, body, and spirit. And then the other three areas, which are more society-based, which are health of the planet,
mm-hmm.
health of the community, and health, of course, of the economy, because we can't make economic decisions over the importance of things like our community or our environment. So all of those six areas, and this Sustainable Health Institute really meets all of those same objectives, which is how can we all support ourselves, support health over the long term, sustainable health over the long term, and bring in the areas of being healthy as a planet, being healthy as an individual, being healthy and sharing within our community. So I think it's just a really wonderful contribution.
That's the exact point, Julie. I think that's precisely where we're in alignment and why it's striking a chord with us, and I believe in our listeners, is that the core onus here is, while there are all these systems of life, that the center point, as we use in our model, is that we are at choice about mm-hmm. our particular orientation, our focus, our thoughts, our behavior. And if we are, in fact, choosing as best we can to be in alignment with health, the health of all these things, and us putting our conscious input into being healthy, that's the key point. All change begins with you.
Mm.
I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. You can hear this show and all past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. I'm here today with
Julie Matthews. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned next Thursday. We have some great guests on for the month of February. So join us here on KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM, Reality Sandwich, on your lunchtime hour.